Hey, everybody, it's The Great Debates. The Great Debates program.
Radio, podcast, media.
It's a media program.
It's a media. It's Great Debates Media.
It's a medium. It's Great Debates the medium.
It is medium.
This is a big waste of time, what we're doing right now. I'd like to get right into it.
Yeah, any time not spent debating is a waste of time. Let's go.
It's a big waste of time. I have a topic, Steve Healy taking the pro. 3 minutes on the clock.
Oh, so like you to take the pro.
In 100 years, Hillary Clinton will be considered a hero.
Of course she will be considered a hero. I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. Look, she won't be the most famous person in the world. She'll be a relatively unknown. You'll have to be kind of interested in American history to know Hillary Clinton's name. But if you know her name, what will you think? You will think she was the first through the door. She took all the bullets. She was the first one to take the flames and the arrows that they were going to throw at the first woman to run for president of the United States. And in 100 years from now, there will be a woman president. Who knows what party she'll be from? Who knows what her agenda will be or what her record will be? But she will know enough to recognize that part of what got her there was Hillary Clinton taking the heat, because the first woman to run for president was going to take some wicked heat, and Hillary took it for all of us.
Was going to take some heat, didn't. Well, did, but not as president of the United States.
Oh, she took ridiculous heat and humiliation.
She did.
Sorry,
but not as president of the United States.
I'm going to respect
you. You said she was the first one through the door. She didn't make it through the door. She got to the door, and then she couldn't open the door. She ran for president and didn't win, like many women before her. Geraldine Ferraro was almost vice president of the United States. Nobody thinks of her as a hero. I mean, I haven't even barely heard her name since she ran for office so many years ago. Well, if Hillary Clinton is going to become a hero as a loser, then why wouldn't Geraldine Ferraro be even mentioned by anyone as a hero, as someone who is at the door the same way that Hillary Clinton was, who is ready to take the bullets of being the first female vice president of the United States, one heartbeat away from the presidency? Did you hear her name once? And that was only 36 years ago, or 32, I forget whether she was 80 or 84. How long ago was that compared to, we're talking about 100 years in the future? I hate to say it, people will barely remember her name. She'll be a footnote. It will be Bill Clinton was president, and you know what? Oddly enough, her wife later ran for president and lost.
Okay, a couple points.
Can you name the loser of the 1916 election? Thank you.
Taft. Mm-hmm. No, not right. Mm. Wilson won.
Great.
Anyway, sorry, I'm getting distracted.
Taft, hero? Not a hero.
A bunch of firemen attack a burning house, and the first fireman runs in, and he gets fire in his face, and he's killed. That's what Hillary Clinton did for all of us.
She didn't the make it in the fireman, house. She got the call. She went to the address, and she wasn't allowed in there.
He didn't
the
make it in either.
The second voting law. Public was like, you can't go in there. We don't trust you.
Yeah, that
to
was
go
the fire
the
hitting her in the face. She got smoked. It was terrible.
Now she got smoked. Now she didn't make it in the house. She only got smoked.
She got fire in her face as
if
she opened the door.
If you're a fireman who didn't
tough job,
make it in
somebody
the house,
had to do it. She got burned up. It stinks.
And
but she's still heroic for having done so.
When the time comes to remember all the people who died in that horrible fire, she will not be remembered as a hero.
Of course
she remembered as hypothetical firefighter won't be remembered at all. 100 years from
now?
Did Susan
B. Anthony get to vote?
Firefighter who
no.
Didn't
did
even...
she win? Did Susan B. Anthony win? No.
There's only room for so many heroes. And the first thing you got to do is win.
After buzzer argument.
Heels. Wins.
Thank you.
What?
Yeah.
It's that simple?
What do you mean it's that simple?
We didn't even ask you what you think, and then you were just like, heels wins.
You guys gave me a look.
What? I gave you a look?
Well, heels did.
Wait, are you conspiring? Is there a code that I don't know about that
no,
makes you automatically
look,
I gave
like,
him the victor's
the look
that's the twinkle
like,
in
did
the
I,
eye.
Did I win? Or did I... What's the verdict, I guess, is the look that he gives me.
Dave, you know, I will say I thought you had a strong argument. I wouldn't have been shocked if Medina had given it to you, honestly.
Wait, that's weird. I didn't like your tears. I didn't like your argument. What? Because she didn't win, she wasn't a hero?
Yeah, history tends to remember the winners. I think I made that point pretty clear when I asked Hillary who lost an election from 100 years ago, and he went,
She will not be in top pantheon of American heroes, but she'll be in there.
Why are we still arguing about this? We got a great guest here.
We've got this great guest that's joined us. Shannon Woodward is here. She's on the show Westworld, which we all really like.
Hey, guys.
Shannon, welcome to The Great Debate.
Such an awesome show. Such an awesome job you do on it. We're so psyched to have you.
You've never seen it. Is that right?
No. What? I've seen every episode. I look forward to it.
I haven't seen every episode, I'm not going to lie, but I've seen a lot of them.
I'm so psyched to
be
here.
I'm a huge fan. Can you tell, if there's listeners out there who don't know about your character, can you tell us a little bit about what's going on?
Yeah. I play a character named Elsie Hughes, and she is one of the head programmers of the hosts, which are the androids at Westworld.
And I don't know when exactly this will drop, but right now we don't know where you are.
Right. Elsie has gotten nabbed.
Yeah.
She got nabbed.
Yeah. What's going on?
How are you nabbed? What? You got nabbed?
Well, yeah, there's a nabbing that happens at the end of...
I remember when the head fell off of the guy.
At the end of episode six.
So this is a host version of you that's here?
No, yes. In the real...
Well, no. Healy, I'm a person.
You're a real person.
Yeah.
Got it.
Guest version.
Are you sure that you're a person?
I'm pretty sure, but I haven't seen my organs. So should we debate that?
Has being on the show made you think about living in a simulation more than you had beforehand?
No.
Really?
It hasn't. Okay, cool. If anything, but sometimes it's hard to tell. As an actor, you start to over-identify with your character. And, you know, I play a programmer. So when people, even friends will say to me things like, we're so close to doing stuff like that. I'm like, no, we're not. What, robots evolving? Are you going to tell me you think your iPhone has feelings today? That's crazy. It doesn't just evolve.
You don't think Siri has feelings? Siri says she has feelings.
She does. Kind of.
Does she? Why don't you ask her? I bet she says she doesn't.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't even know if I have Siri. Siri, do you have feelings? Oh, shut up.
I don't understand.
Do you have feelings, Siri?
How can I help you?
Do you have feelings, Siri?
I feel like I need another question.
Weak.
Very weak.
Siri stinks, right?
She sucks.
The narratives need some work on Siri.
Yes, we need Ford to get in here.
I know.
Do some work on this Siri narrative for sure.
Maybe just to get things going, we should ask Shannon the traditional three questions we often ask the guests.
Oh, I like that. What a great idea. Yeah. Shannon, I think when we do a live show, we often bring guests onto the stage and just to sort of get to know them because we might want to debate something about who they are, what they're like, what we might be able to divine about them. We asked them three important questions. We've already answered one of them, which is, what is your name? Mm-hmm. But you can answer it anyway.
Shannon.
Where are you from is question number two.
Mostly South Florida and Texas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the third and final question, what did you have for lunch today?
A Kind bar.
That's it?
Whoa. I know.
Wow. Cool. I mean, I'm learning a lot. Funny,
I had a late brunch.
And then you had like a
I had like a turkey banh mi for like a brunch.
Ooh, here we go.
And then later on,
the life of an actress.
Later on, no less.
Yeah.
Later on, had a Kind bar.
Oof, that's solid then.
Yeah.
Where did you have the turkey banh mi?
Sycamore Kitchen.
Delightful
establishment.
What a spot.
Good times.
Great lemonade there.
Well, would you like to play a little game, Shannon?
I would love to.
A while ago, Dave and I played a game on the podcast that was so nerve-wracking, I'm kind of like sweating just thinking about it.
Oh my God, I'm scared.
The first and only time we played it was, I believe, in a hotel room in Cleveland, Ohio during the Republican National
Convention. It was in a Super 8 motel in the Republican Convention. Tensions were high.
Only added to the anxiety of the week.
The game is called Tough Impressions.
Okay.
I love this game.
And basically what we're going to do is I'm going to give you an impression that is... very, very tough.
Right.
Dave, do you want to go first?
If you want me to.
Now, I feel like last time I made an error because the impressions were like too on the borderline of something that could be done.
Are you trying to make them even tougher?
Well, I think it'll make it easier, if you will, to make them tougher.
I don't know what you mean, but what do you got
in mind? It'll be liberating.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How tough these impressions
are. Okay. All right.
Are you ready?
No.
First impression. Wayne Gretzky.
Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
Does anyone have any idea how he speaks?
Well, I don't. I mean, all right, I'll try. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is nonsense. Mm-hmm. We were playing the Flames in 91, and it was probably about 2/3 of the way through the season. And I remember we needed at least one point desperately, which was why we were so revved up before the game.
That's
the end of it.
I think that was excellent.
Wait,
was
are you really finding a real Wayne?
Yeah, would you like to hear a little Wayne Gretzky?
Yeah, what does he actually
first,
speak
let's comment,
like?
Deshan, what did you think of Dave's impression?
I have no idea what Wayne Gretzky actually sounds like, but you know, I felt really calmed by his voice.
It was calming. I think he really captured the boring quality that Wayne Gretzky has.
Also, no one's just ever said just the right amount of Canadian in there.
Yeah, I overdid it a little. I felt like I needed.
What's let's this? Hear a little Wayne.
Okay.
Lil Wayne?
That's not him.
No, it's not different. It's a little bigger. You know, it's people are the same. People are going to treat him with a great deal of respect. I said this a couple months ago that he's
that sounds nothing like what you did, but
a little more
dangerous. But I feel like I captured something.
I think you did a great job.
There's something about, like an alley-oop, it's pretty strong.
Yeah.
It's going to be much better than whatever it is I do.
Okay.
I mean, what are the odds I even know who this person is?
Are you ready, Shannon, to play tough impressions?
Never been less ready. Let's do this.
Wayne Gretzky's line mate, Yari Curry.
Your impression challenge is Martha Washington.
Keely, do you have audio of Martha Washington?
What's going on? Do you have audio of Martha?
No. Just do sum it up the best.
I know, George. I know you're not lying. I know. But I didn't move the apple juice. I didn't move it. You always do this. You always do this when you're lying. That's it. That's what I got.
Wow. That was very fantastic. That was great.
I'm in Valley Forge. I'm sitting back.
That was an wondering where the apple juice is.
Yeah. I don't know what accent that was, but I believe
it's like
that
a little
was
Minnesota
era appropriate. Yeah.
There was a little, but I'm like, you know, these people are in 1700 Virginia.
I don't know anything about how they talk. That could have been it. That could have been exactly how they talk.
Gave it a go. I just went for Midwest.
That was spectacular.
Oh,
I
gotta
say, that was great. And you told a little story.
Yeah,
that's the difference between like a trained actress and just like a bum off the street.
He couldn't wait. No, who couldn't tell a lie?
Yeah, he couldn't tell a lie.
Yeah, that was him. That's what I thought. Okay, that was okay.
I know. You know
cherry tree? Which was it?
The takeaway to me was you made a bold choice and you just committed.
Thank you.
Yeah, and it paid off in spades.
Okay, do we want to do two more tough impressions?
Sure, let's try.
They're fun. Keep going,
Dave.
Yeah,
for you.
Yeah,
along the same lines. Abe Lincoln.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now we know a little bit about what. Do you have audio of
There's
Abe Lincoln?
There's no audio of Lincoln.
Okay. Okay. Do you have a scene in mind that you'd like to? Because I'm not just going to do Gettysburg.
Shannon just came up with a scene.
I know,
you know
it was amazing.
Yeah.
There's a whole movie about Lincoln.
I know. I didn't see it.
Mm.
Really?
No.
I mean,
it's a good
you're
movie.
You're stalling.
Okay. I'm thinking. Ready? I'll be there right after I use the washroom. I have to use the washroom first, and then we can discuss the issues. I have to use the washroom, and then we can do this.
That's why Abe Lincoln. You know, Abraham Lincoln was maybe the best president we've ever had.
But he was bald.
That was Muppet.
But he's really worried about finding the washroom.
Yeah,
you have no idea how accurate that actually was.
That's true.
It was very
none
accurate.
Of us do. That's
we do have.
And
idea.
He always had to use the washroom, always, and then he would discuss the issues.
Where's the washroom?
Yeah, that's Abe Lincoln.
Yeah.
That's him.
Excuse me.
That's everybody knows my Lincoln impression. Guys,
look, I admit that was terrible. I got scared and I didn't know what to do.
It's kind of an Ernie meets Kermit the Frog.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was a little Kermit. Yeah,
and also a little like, hey, you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, what's that?
The Goonies?
Oh. Mm-hmm. These aren't tough impressions. These are like unachievable.
These are impossible.
Impossible impressions. Maybe that's
Gretzky's
the name of the game.
Tough.
Impossible impressions
tough impression,
has
I
a
do
ring
okay.
to it.
Yeah.
All right, what's the last one?
All right, let's keep in the theme of impossible impressions.
Okay.
This one's for you, Shannon.
Okay.
Let's go with Marie Antoinette.
I don't speak French. I wish I spoke French right now. Je let them eat cake.
Oh, yes. Okay,
good. Where is the cake?
Good.
Let them eat it.
Okay.
That's it. Yeah, that's what I got.
That was great. That was great.
I mean, I just said the right thing.
Attitude.
Yeah, it definitely style. Had it.
Okay. I think Shannon won the round there.
Oh, no question.
There's no question.
I mean, yeah.
Yes.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
It's good. I think it is good to realize that, like, I think a lot of people think actors, like, it's just whatever, anybody can do that. And it's important to see an actor show through the game of impossible impressions the difference between a serious actor and a person.
I agree.
Job not that Dave isn't a serious actor.
I appreciate this because these impressions I did were definitely very inaccurate, but I just took a shot. You just got to swing.
Felt right.
The thing about impossible impressions, there is nothing to be convinced of it, that except that you're confident.
It's a really a confidence game. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what it is. It's a bluffing game.
It's a bluffing game.
It's really just like, are you going to call me on my bullshit
or not? Yeah,
the Wayne Gretzky was actually pretty good.
Thank you.
Tight Wayne Gretzky.
I kind of feel captured something about the guy.
Yeah, you did.
I think we should try a debate.
I think that is what we do.
Yeah, maybe we should do
we're
that.
Better at that than bad impressions.
I'm ready for a guest debate. Okay, great. And so... Shannon, what we usually do when we have a guest on is that we have you take on both of the debaters in their traditional roles.
Okay.
So what I'd like to propose is that you, the first debate, you take the pro against Dave, who will take the con.
Okay.
And I have a topic for you if you're ready.
I'm ready.
Okay, great. The topic up for debate, Hollywood is as American as Iowa.
Of course Hollywood is as American as Iowa. It is literally in America. I mean, if we're talking about even just literally, without debating anything, any kind of emotionality, whatever kind of political views you're talking about, I mean, just in a literal sense, of course, Hollywood is part of the state of California. It is the sixth largest economy in the entire world, let alone, I mean, I actually have no idea who ranks first in the US, but I'd imagine California is probably number one if it's not very close. So also, in addition to that, people... Not a lot of people are actually from Hollywood who come here. Well, you're talking about Hollywood. You're not talking about Los Angeles. You're talking about Hollywood as an industry, right? People come from all over America to be writers, to be directors, to make all kinds of art. Of course, Hollywood is the definition of America. It is the American dream.
Hollywood isn't even a real place, man. You can't, Hollywood isn't a collection of people, it's an idea. It's not defined by borders, it's not an actual place that exists. It's a thing that exists in the mind of American people that represents the movie industry, the TV industry, the stars, the celebrities. It's not real. It's fake. Iowa's a real place. I don't happen to think that Iowa's even that representative of the United States, but it is more American than Hollywood. Why? It doesn't have an, it is not built on an industry that sole purpose is to create a facade for the rest of the American people.
I guess potatoes mean nothing to you.
Potatoes? I'm not saying Iowa is, well, because they grow potatoes in Iowa.
There's a lot of farming in Iowa.
And what's more, you know what? Let's lean into it. What's more American than our agrarian heritage? You know, Iowa is actually a very interesting combination of rural areas, the farmland, the as you said, the corn pastures, and also metropolitan areas. Sioux, people think Des Moines and Sioux City aren't real cities. They sure as hell are.
First of all, Hollywood is an actual city in which I actually physically
Los
reside.
Los Angeles is a real city.
It's a bit gaslighting to say that Hollywood is not a real place. I physically live there. I sleep there every night. So aside from that, to say that Hollywood is, like I said before, the sixth largest economy in the world, and the majority of that does come from Hollywood. You're talking about all forms of pop culture. Just because you don't agree with it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. And it doesn't mean that it doesn't have a monetary... If you're talking about income, you're talking about industry, like you're talking about farming, which is a very legitimate... We're talking about them being equally American, not that one is more profitable than the other or one is more interesting to you than the other.
The economy or how much money it makes. I actually think the fact that California is the sixth largest economy in the world makes this more disparate than the rest of America because most people don't happen to live in smaller economies that they themselves have to be as big as countries like Brazil or France or Germany.
Prove to me that Hollywood is un-American. What about Hollywood is un-American?
My assignment is not to prove that it is un-American. It's only only to prove that it is less American than Iowa. And what Iowa gives us is more of a disparate representation of the things, the people, the ideals of America than Hollywood does. Hollywood is trying to sell you an image of America that does not exist, whereas Iowa is itself America. It is a place where you have farmers. It is also a place where you have bankers and lawyers, and a place where you also have actors.
There are bankers,
and
there are lawyers, there are actors, there are farmers. Hollywood was a farming community, actually, before it
no
there were orange
is.
Groves all through Hollywood, all up outposts behind the Hollywood Bowl. And there's nothing less American about Hollywood just because to you it represents something else. It is a city that is fully functioning with all of the things that you've previously mentioned about Iowa.
The Americanness of it, of either of these places, shouldn't be measured by how fully functioning it is or how much of a profitable economy it is. It should be represented by what are the people like there? What are the ideas like there? What are the jobs like
the
there? What is the landscape
jobs
like?
Jobs and ideas
and
make
else,
something less
something
of
else.
Someone less of an American citizen is actually a much fundamentally scarier issue than whether or not cities or a city compared to a state is incomparable. It's really a troubling, disturbing idea that what someone might do for a living makes them less American than someone else.
Again, I'm not saying that it's either, I'm not saying that what someone thinks, I'm not looking at things on a person by person basis. I would never say that one person is less American than another person.
You're talking about the physical landscape?
I'm talking about Hollywood versus Iowa. Define that however you want. I'd like to add that Hollywood, by the way, happens to be, just to like throw out all the facts, a desert climate, which is something you only find in the Southwest. Iowa happens to be like a pretty good general representative of the American climate.
Well, that's
also
certainly not true. If
of
you're
course
looking
it
at
is.
Percentages of the United States, like how much of the Midwest, what kind of climate would you define Iowa as?
Temperate. I would say that it has very bitter winters like much of the North, and it also has very hot summers like much of the South. And I would also say that it rains there like sometimes, but not never the way it never rains here. And I wouldn't say
so
that
you're comparing
it has,
this to what, Plymouth Rock or where the Constitution
no,
was
I'm
signed?
No, I'm comparing it to America as a whole, and I don't think that it would be fair to say that, like, if you were drawing a picture, for example, of the vegetation of America as a whole, you'd be much better suited to choose the vegetation of Iowa than you would the vegetation of Hollywood. You wouldn't say that cactus and palm trees represent what the American landscape
actually,
is.
Actually, interestingly
you would
enough, palm trees aren't indigenous
trees and
to
the
California.
Wheat fields of Iowa.
Palm trees aren't indigenous to California at all. They were actually brought over.
Seems irrelevant to me. It's what we have now. My point is that Iowa, taken as a whole, first of all, just the fact that it's a large state gives us much more of the sort of variety that comes to typify the American experience.
Well, California is a much larger state than
we're
Iowa.
We're talking
but
about Hollywood, not
one,
California.
One
we're saying
small
Hollywood.
City.
It's Hollywood versus Iowa. It's not California versus Iowa, and I think that's an important distinction.
I think the working Americans of Hollywood are really... It's not a fair thing to compare their slice of land to the entire state and say that their city is not American because of the temperate climate of Iowa.
I am a working person of Hollywood, and my experience is so dissimilar from the average American's that I don't feel myself comfortable saying that my experience is representative of America. I would certainly, if I were going to present...
I dropped out of high school and I came to Hollywood when I was 15 years old as a high school dropout, and I worked and worked and worked. I went to 15, 16 hours of auditions driving around for several years. And if that's not representative of the American dream, I don't know what else is.
Your story happens to be more representative of the American dream. But here's what I would say. If an alien came to Earth and you said, we have to choose one person to represent the American experience, or you have to choose a population as a whole, would you rather choose one person from Hollywood or one person from Iowa to say, this more or less represents what America is about?
I want to know what they did. I want to know where they came from. I want to know how many hours they spent. I want to know where they started and where they finished. And then I'll tell you if that represents the American dream.
You're trying to analyze things on an individual level. What I'm saying is this is an argument about aggregate populations and spaces. It's not about one person.
I don't think it is.
I
think this is about what makes people American.
Well, it's become that, and I would again argue that the things that the people in Iowa do are more American than the things that people in Hollywood do.
I don't think even you believe that.
Okay, let's
do
some closing statements.
Wow.
Closing statements.
Wow. Closing statements. I'll go first. Or would you like to open?
You go ahead.
Iowa is not 100% American. I understand that in today's world, America is more urban than people actually think it is. And Iowa, I believe, is more agrarian and more rural than most states in the country. Therefore, it's not the perfect representation of at least the demographics of America. But it is more cosmopolitan than people, I believe, have the sort of schema of Iowa in their mind. It does have large cities in it. And I believe that the people of, again, I go back to, the people of Iowa, the jobs of Iowa, the climate of Iowa, even the recreations of Iowa, even the image that Iowa projects to the rest of the country, even the ideals and the values of Iowa, and also the politics of Iowa, and even within that, the political breakdown of Iowa is more American, which is not to say that it is better or worse, but merely more representative of America as a whole than all of the same sort of aspects that I just noted, the politics, the climate, et cetera, of as Hollywood is. It is more American for those reasons. Amen.
One of the most incredible things about Hollywood, California is the amalgamation of different cultures, races, and the pockets of towns, of this town that they all work cohesively as one community. So to boil Hollywood down, the Hollywood, the city, down to one industry is completely dismissive of what makes this incredible melting pot of a community function so cohesively. In addition to that, I reiterate that Hollywood is an icon in its own right. And that in and of itself represents the American dream, that people can come from anywhere and everywhere, have absolutely no kind of connection to Hollywood, no kind of prerequisite or even experience, and they can show up and they can succeed based purely on their talent and hard work. That is the American dream.
Wow.
Wow.
What?
But she wins.
Damn.
Because remember the top, Dave. Hollywood is as American as Iowa.
Yeah,
not more.
I don't think it is. I think Iowa's more. All I have to prove is that Iowa's more American. Whatever. You give her the win. I honestly feel like this.
I love Iowa, but we're all American.
I think the system is a little rigged around here.
Whoa,
I feel like
whoa,
I haven't won in
whoa,
a long
guys,
time.
Guys, wait.
Whoa. One of the pillars of the Great Debate Society is that, like, we make these decisions about who wins, and then there's a peaceful transfer of power.
You know, transfer of debate.
Can I tell you why I'm really heated? Yeah. Because first of all, I don't know why I hadn't thought about this issue for a second, and I got so worked up about it. I don't know why.
I got really worked up about it too.
That was I don't know what I believe.
That was anymore. I would call that a hot debate.
It's been a rough week about who's American and who's not.
That's true.
And I think I also have like a bit of fired up energy about what makes people deserve to be considered citizens.
The other reason I'm upset is my parents are here, and my dad gave you both of ice cream before this debate started, and
that's
he
true.
Said that this was a bribe to so that I would win at least one debate, and
right.
I'm out of debates today, and I didn't win either, and I feel like you should let my dad bribe you.
I should.
We can tell your dad you're one. So.
He's probably listening right now. He's out in the living room.
He's also making an investment in the future. And if I just tipped it,
you're right.
If you're going to throw a game, you got to be careful
about it.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Strong chance Dan's angling for more ice cream.
I mean, we've got more. He'd be happy to scoop it for you, I'm sure.
This is one of the best bowls of ice cream I've ever had.
What kind was it?
It was in Jerry's mint chocolate cookie,
Cookie, which is such a great take on mint chocolate chip, and it's like a nice chain. It's delicious.
I personally
like the chip in mint chocolate chip is maybe my least favorite part about it, because it's not the greatest chocolate all the time. It gets a little bit caught up in your teeth, and but the cookie texture.
Yeah, baby. Hey, Shannon, I tip my hat. That was...
It was a great debate.
I feel like I also had a bit of a... I mean, arguing a city as American was... I had a bit of an advantage, I feel like.
That whole thing about how we're all sensitive about what it means to be American and what the experience has been in the last week since the election, Shannon, made me think about something that you told me earlier about what you did as your reaction to the election on 11/9. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this? Because I think it's fascinating.
That morning, obviously, I was desolate. And I think somehow out of like the feeling of being like, I was like eating brunch by myself doing a crossword puzzle. And I felt super alone. And so in like in an existential way and in like a literal way. And I had on a whim, I made this Gmail address, how I feel on 119, the numbers, at gmail.com. And I started tweeting it and I Instagrammed it. And I asked people, you know, all who, no matter who they supported, to write and, you know, tell me how they were feeling. And I have now over like, it's like 350 responses, but like printed out, it's like 300 dense pages of information.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Like yeah. A record.
Could be a little book.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, I have a few ideas about what to do with it, but it's really interesting because especially people didn't really know if it was me reading it. Like if you're listening, it's me reading it. But it's great because a lot of people are just venting. And I can't even imagine, yeah. Like, everybody probably felt some version of that kind of alone. But I can't even imagine, you know, if you're in middle America or if you're in real Trump country, like, you know, and all your friends are supporting Trump, like, to tell them that you feel really sad and scared is probably...
I think often about people with families, families where you're everyone else in your family or your parents have a very different mindset about things than you. And it's got to be very difficult just on a human level for that. I mean, among the thousands of things that are problematic.
Or even to be a Trump supporter in a blue state, you know, like I'm interested in how they feel. In
to say, I'm psyched.
There were a few people that did. I wish there were more. Hmm. There are a few really interesting ones. I mean, there were a few women who said at least three who said that they were pregnant and hadn't told their husband or boyfriend yet because they felt like it was such a scary climate. They were terrified. So they hadn't had the guts to say something. There was another woman who said she's a police officer in the South. And if Hillary won, she was going to come out, but now she feels like she'll never come out.
Oh my.
Like really, some amazing. Of it's really heavy.
And are you still soliciting email? Like are people?
Yeah, yeah, I am. At least, I think at least for another week. Yeah. And then after that,
what's the email address again? As we get
how I feel on 119 at gmail.com. And the 119 is the number 119.
How I feel on 11. How I feel on 119 at gmail.com. Yeah. That seems like that's going to be someday soon and someday in the distant future, a very interesting like primary source document.
I hope so.
Yeah,
it seemed just. I was like, oh my god, I wonder how everyone else is feeling right now.
Wow, great use of like
gmail.com.
I guess so, or just like. I feel like so often we have people have ideas like this and don't follow through on them. And it kind of shows like, oh, just one simple idea. And suddenly you 2 days later, you have 300 pages of probably fascinating material.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah, I just started printing it out today. It's nuts.
That's awesome. Good for you, man.
Well, thanks. Thanks for asking me about it.
You know, all of this election nonsense has made me really feel like I'd like to go on a vacation.
Mm. Where do you think about going, Dan?
I wish there was somewhere I could go where I could really escape sort of our current reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like somewhere sort of fantastical, like
Disneyland?
We're kind of like Disneyland in that it would be like a real rich thematic experience.
Oh, you're looking for something very immersive.
Incredibly immersive and maybe like with a bit of a period kind of to it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Do you like adventurous type vacations? Or?
Yeah. So you looking for more of like a spa retreat?
I don't want to go on a. I don't want to go on a tour. I don't want to go on a tour. No, I mean sex, maybe, but I could.
You're open to it.
Whatever. What I really want is to be able to kind of make my own way in this world.
Interesting.
A world.
You're looking for like a park, but or a world that's like even. Bigger than.
Oh, have you ever been on the Delos website?
Oh, yeah. Delos has a new.
Those guys make cool immersive experiences.
Yeah, right? Yeah, theme parks in particular. Where you can go. This guy, you're talking about Westworld.
Westworld.
I've heard of it.
I thought you were talking about a hotel in Hawaii.
I would go there.
I mean, I would go there. It would be an immersive thematic experience with maybe like some transportation to a different time.
Yeah,
in a way,
like a VR moment.
Yeah.
Do you have a Westworld top?
So here's the thing. I thought it might be fun while Shannon's here to do a Westworld top.
I'm open. Yeah. To
Are
this.
You cool with that?
Very cool. With
okay,
this.
Great. So let's have Healy take the pro on this one.
Okay. Yep. I'm ready.
Heels, are you ready?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. The topic I have for you guys, along the lines of what I was talking about earlier. Westworld could be a good place for a family vacation.
I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. Josie is not texting her friends all the time. Charlie is not playing Pokemon Go. Dad has put aside his legal work. Mom is not on call in the ER. Everybody is together in a shared outdoor experience that is Westworld. It's like a camping trip times 50. They are interacting with robots. You can make mistakes. You can have adventures. The family has to work together like the pioneer families of old, of Iowa and of California in American history. Everybody's camping out under the stars. There's a little bit of danger and a little bit of challenge, but not too much, not more than you can handle. You know Dallas has got this covered. You can bail out of there whenever you need to. And the whole family is coming together. That's why the Westworld family package is so valuable. That's why it's so cool to take your whole family to Westworld. Yeah, it's expensive. I mean, Westworld is not cheap. It costs $40,000 a day, we learned recently. But, you know, if you have the means, take your family to Westworld. Having it, the kids will never forget it. That's why I think Westworld would make a great vacation for a family.
My name is Shannon Woodward, and I'm taking the con.
Oh, no.
First of all, if you have to spend $40,000 a day to go live in another time, which is incredibly violent and dangerous, from a child's perspective, if that's what you need to do in order to get everyone to step away from work and have no phones, then I think you're really misevaluating, first of all, what your vacation options are. Second of all, we're going to step away from the idea that the time period that Pokemon Go is still popular in whatever time period Westworld exists in. But why don't we just start with, in the fundamental level, aside from the idea that there are sex workers everywhere, that there is violence happening on a massive scale, continuously, the idea that you are teaching your children that these people that look exactly like them are not human, on their impressionable brains, if they are having to look in the face of all of these other people and learn the lack of empathy, now that fundamentally seems like a massive detriment to raising your child. So I'm going to leave that there, first of all. That disqualifies it entirely for me as a parent. And then we could go ahead and step into the idea that the adventures that are available to you at Westworld involve mostly crime. They involve robbing. They involve murdering. They involve nabbing down a bad guy. Now, this is one thing if this is a cop in training program that you're taking your son or daughter to, but to teach someone that it's fun to go apprehend someone and then put justice on them of your own will. That just seems incredibly undemocratic to
okay.
me.
Is that your opening statement? We into free skate?
Sure. Yes, we are.
Okay. I got a couple points I'd like to bring up. First of all, yeah, $40,000 a day is not a bargain. That's not cheap. But as you point out, Westworld is taking place in some kind of future. It could be the equivalent
sure,
of like,
let's even say $20,000 a day right now. Let's
it might
say
be the equivalent
that's insane.
$200 a day for all we know.
You're really, really doubling down on America right
this
now.
This would be crazy inflation. You know, who knows what happens. Now, let me walk you through a scenario. Like, mom, dad, and the family goes into Westworld. They have a black hat adventure for a week. It's really fun. It's thrilling. There's gun shooting. Dad.
They're like the Manson family?
Then at the end, Billy says to dad and mom, he says, Mom, Dad, you know, that was fun in Westworld, but in real life, I want to be a white hat. And mom and dad say, Billy, yeah, that's right. I'm glad you learned that lesson through experience.
Well, first of all, you're implying that these parents are putting they're choosing for their child. So they're
the
forcing them
vote.
To have an experience that the family should vote
I
to do all
the family
all
should
their
vote
own.
On whether you're going to be white hat or black hat and what kind of adventure you're doing. And yeah, don't take the kids to Pariah
well, this
like
is,
day
you're
one.
Bringing your child on your own adventure, which frankly seems misguided in the first place.
Well, look, you know, there's some scary
parts. You're going to force your young children to go on a black hat adventure where there is going to be danger and intrigue? How old are these children?
I mean, wouldn't it be fun? Picture your family. Wouldn't it be fun for everybody to rob a stagecoach together?
I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen a computer programmer rob a stagecoach, but I don't think my father would be great at it.
If me, my mom, my dad, my sister went on a vacation, I guess my brother-in-law comes now too, and we robbed a stagecoach together, that would be such a gas. Or we like held up an old mine.
But what fun would it be to rob a stagecoach if there wasn't any inherent danger that
well,
was
it does hurt a little bit, right? It's like paintball.
You're gonna
level.
Let your kid get fake shot? That's crazy.
Well, it'd be fun to play paintball with your kid
but
if you were the right
because
age.
Because there's not these other people, if you shoot them, they simulate death in a way that is incredibly visceral and real. That's traumatizing. I mean, that could induce PTSD in a child.
I gotta tell you, like, it's.
I mean, you're talking about robbing a stagecoach as a family activity. I just think that's incredibly dangerous and misguided. And I just think, in terms of a child's mental development, it's just not worth risking the future of your child's health to argue for taking them on a particular vacation instead of going to Hawaii, where you can swim with turtles, or, you know, go in a canoe, eat poi, learn about someone else's culture, instead of like, why don't you just go to a ghost town?
One of a parent's toughest jobs is to prepare children for the harsh reality of the world. It's so hard because you want to protect.
The world is not the actual Wild West.
You want to protect and shield your children. So what a great,
wait.
Lucky good fortune you that know, there is Westworld where you
can take
your kids. It is
actually a sad
kids.
Reality that I can think of, that some people do actually have to worry about their children walking outside of their house and being shot on their way to school. However, that is not a reality that we actually wish for our children. So to go... To train your child to think that that is something that their subconscious needs to be concerned about is not creating the kind of society that we want our children to live in or to thrive for or to expect. I mean, we don't want to normalize that kind of behavior. I think it's really dangerous.
It could be a really... I mean, you show me the 6-year-old American boy that hasn't, like, pretended to play with guns,
and
right?
I think that could be a problem. I think that's a real problem. But they're not watching someone
World,
die when they pretend
you
to
take
them.
We have a huge problem with guns in this country. You take them to Westworld, you show them some very real simulacra of the damage that can be done with guns,
your
and
argument,
you've taught them
no,
a powerful lesson.
No, it's about normalization. You've actually made my argument for me right now. The idea that, like, people give their children toy guns is part of normalizing gun violence, but then if you're talking about normalizing the gun violence to an extent where they're watching someone actually physically suffer and die in front of them, and then you're going to tell them, like, oh, that's fine, this is just a vacation.
Did you watch The Brady Bunch? Were you a fan of The Brady Bunch?
Yeah, I've seen The Brady Bunch.
I thought you were about to ask her if she watched. Didn't you watch Westworld?
Seen it, heard of
Remember
it?
When Bobby Brady got obsessed with Jesse James, and then
I don't know this episode.
And then he meets a guy whose parents were like robbed by Jesse James or something, and Bobby has a nightmare of the Brady family being shot by Jesse James, and he learns a lesson, which is like, Jesse James is actually kind of bad, and I shouldn't.
But he imagined this isn't something that you went through.
It's
have you
true,
ever seen, have you, Healy, have you ever seen someone die?
No.
Can you imagine how horrific that would be if you saw it as a child?
I think a way.
You're pontificating. You answer my question. Yes or no?
A way to prepare yourself for the harsh realities of life. Might be. Let's say you see
the way to prepare yourself for being a murderer might be to practice murdering
let's say
as a child.
Sean.
For sure,
you see little Sean and he's pew pew pew. He's pretending to have toy guns. Okay, Sean, I'm gonna take. Dad and I are going to Westworld. We're going to take you along with
it's
us.
It's the same as saying you see your child
you
smoking and you make them smoke a whole pack of cigarettes until they
an
throw up. But you know what?
Strategy.
You're still going to die from cigarettes. So you just effectively hurt your child.
That is a way. That is an effective. It's
so
crude.
Wait, let me just get this straight.
Strategy.
Your argument about parenting is that it would be best to make your child murder someone so they can maybe understand gun violence?
I also think you're, I'm going to be honest here, your somewhat scandalous show focuses on the sex and violence element of Westworld, but Westworld is huge.
No, but there's a really wonderful moment with a
river.
Child, and I believe it's the second episode, where he goes up to, the young child goes up to Dolores and he says, "You're one of them, aren't you? You're not real." And she looks confused, and he just looks at her. And I find that moment so disturbing, that this child is being taught that, especially that some people aren't as human as other people, but in addition, this woman is not human.
No, that child is being taught that appearances aren't always what you think,
that
reality and illusion need to be separated, that we need to be careful and discerning about telling these things apart. That's an important thing to teach a child, especially one that lives in a world where Westworld is technologically possible.
I think actually now, to argue that you would have to know much more about the child's psyche if you're saying that this is something that could be even possibly positive
for them. Your twisted television program focuses on the prostitutes and the shooting. fishing. But there's families all across the woods of Westworld. There are families fishing and camping and experiencing nature in ways that you just can't do without a lot of effort and money here in the U.S.
Actually, in fact, you can.
Pop into Westworld and
for $40,000 a day, in a wagon. There are countless places that you could go to. Ride around in a wagon if you wanted to, or go on an adventure. You could go fishing. You could even go hunting if that's something that you wanted to do. But the idea of like ensuing danger and gun violence and sex workers and to bring child or a child or several children into an environment like this, as opposed to any other place, it just I think it seems like deeply irresponsible. I don't know what it is that children could take away that could be solely positive from this experience without something that's negatively, deeply impacting that actually could bring on some form of PTSD.
There's going to need to be some parental supervision. Like if you take a kid who's too young to
Disneyland.
Guys, we're
going to need to stop the androids right before the death. This is where I draw the line.
If you take a kid to Disneyland and you take them on like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride when they're too young, they could be too scared of that.
No one dies on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride.
They go to hell. No, Mr. Toad and
Hell's
the other guy die and they go to hell.
Hell's not a real place.
To a kid today, that is as real as in the future Westworld will be to them.
So you think that animatronic frogs that hardly move are less are just as real as watching someone
die?
To
the simple-minded children of 2016, I don't know what year Westworld takes place in, but
shots
to them,
fired.
That's going to be like...
Well, it seems like now your argument is relying on the fact that these children might not be very bright.
No, they live in a dystopian future that's allowed Westworld to happen. I'm going to make my closing statement.
I'm ready for closing statement.
Westworld is a rich pageant of experiences. What parent wouldn't want to introduce their child together with the whole family to camping by the waterfall, seeing those grand vistas, and yes, experiencing interactions with the citizens. Who's to say you can go talk to the blacksmith? He tells you about his trade. You meet the sheriff. He tells you tales of his adventure. And you go hunt a bandit. Yeah, you should get some advice. You shouldn't go, like I say, you shouldn't go to Pariah right away. You shouldn't immediately go looking for the maze or the place where the snake lays its eggs. But yeah, have some fun in Westworld. Camp out, bring your kids, let them test their limits a little bit in a safe space. Then afterwards, agree, there should be some family conversation on the way back from Westworld about what everyone's experienced, what you think about it. And, you know, if people exhibited behavior that was a little too risky or fringe, great place to talk about it without hurting anyone real, just the robots of Westworld. Westworld would be a great place for a family vacation.
Westworld would be an absolutely terrible place for a family vacation, and especially if your argument for going to Westworld includes a very serious conversation on the way home about the incredibly disturbing things that you witnessed there that you may never recover from. It's probably not the best place for you to go on a family vacation. Where you ought to go is somewhere like Utah, that looks exactly like Westworld, where you might be able to camp by the river and meet actual human citizens who live there, who actually work the land. Instead of being in a fantasy world, your children deserve to learn about the real world as it exists. That is a place where a child can actually learn to function in society. Westworld is designed for adults who already have fully formed frontal cortexes, that are ready and able to engage in a fantastical experience that can also be terrifying, disturbing, and therefore moving. It's not designed for a child who has no idea what reality is yet. So putting them in a false reality is something that could very deeply endanger their permanent development. Westworld is a terrible place for a family.
Wow. Another hot debate. Shit.
White hot.
Was it white hot?
White
it was
hot.
Just,
hot
I was
debate.
Just using my serious tone.
I will say, like, if you're my mom and you just gave me that talk and I'm a, say, 10-year-old kid, you better believe I want to go to Westworld now, even worse than I did before.
Well, it's not that the kids don't want to go.
Deans,
it's that
they think?
Shouldn't go.
My take is that they're, okay, I'm convinced by both of you. I feel like there's like an age line where below, it's like you must be 12 and above or something. Certainly an adult family vacation.
Adult, for sure.
Us and our parents now, great.
That would have been a good
idea. Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, as Healy said, I mean, it would be such a gas.
Gas.
I think Healy...
Wait, so who won?
But I don't know yet. I was very convinced by what you said about how The lesson about empathy that, you know, tugged at my heartstrings.
Let's bring it back to the election
for kids.
Talk about empathy.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence here.
Wow,
Davis, what did you think?
I know I didn't win. I'm the only guy who can't win around here. Healy wins one, Shannon wins one, and then they both win together. They were both so amazing. Well, whatever, I don't care anymore. No, I think that I'm with you. I'd be hard pressed to choose winner. I believe that this is one of the ones where I think I would give it a slight edge to Shannon. I felt like the arguments were a little more both creative and concrete.
Also had a lot more time in Westworld.
Yeah, you are a bit more of an expert on the subject. I thought that I agree that it would be fun to go as a grown-up family, but I think that we all agree with that's sort of not the spirit of the debate.
Can you imagine, like, your girlfriend is like, my family wants you to come to Westworld with us.
Please go. Oh, man. My girlfriend sounds with exactly
your,
like
and
that.
And then, like, your girlfriend's dad is like, tell me we'd go
and
to
he
town.
He gets so crazy. He does the worst shit you've ever seen.
What a horrible place for a family vacation.
He just gunned down.
this is a great argument.
Debate aside, I think maybe Westworld is like Vegas. You know,
also, it's not a point. Yeah. Come to think of it, the argument of, like, what could you, for a family of four, what could you do with $160,000?
Yeah, like, buy a house.
Which member of your family would you most want to go to Westworld with? Dan.
My brother.
Dave.
I don't know.
Oh, second, Uncle Steve.
Oh. Uncle Steve.
Sorry, Davis.
Yeah, I go with Esther and Donut.
Oh, yeah. Donut would not make it in Westworld.
That's dangerous.
He's not getting out of my little sash or my little...
You want to spend your whole time in Westworld taking care of Donut?
She would love it. Are you kidding me? She could run forever. We'd go out to the canyons and the...
The fields are lovely.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
What about when people start shooting at her?
One's gonna shoot at Donut. She's gonna be famous there. She's gonna be the mascot of the place.
There's a bunch of sick bastards.
We're in a Donut fantasy.
Yeah.
Donut. My understanding is that, well, I don't know. We'd have to consult the handbook. But I would think that if you brought Donut there, that she couldn't be killed by the Donut's my dog, by the way. That she wouldn't be able to be killed by the host.
I think that's true.
Yeah,
but so I doubt they let anyone bring pets though.
Right? I wanted to ask you something. Do you think it's in Westworld world? Is it just flat out more prestigious to be a scientist that works on the human robots, or is the challenge of making one of the horses like kind of its own interesting
little
puzzle?
That's interesting. Yeah. They did cut some of this out because there was a scene that was cut
totally
out.
Boring.
No, there was a scene in episode 3, and there was some other stuff that, like, my whole backstory was that I used to run animal behavior.
Oh,
and
that's
how I got promoted so quickly, was that I ran animal behavior. And so, no, it's not that it's less prestigious, it's that you're dealing with not without the human behavior. So it's like, you know, you work your way up, I think, is
very cool.
How that,
very cool.
So that.
Well, I don't know if you heard that sound, but that was the sound of Davis pouring me another Diane Keaton, which, as you may know, is the official drink of the Great Debates.
It is a delicious treat.
It gets the job done, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that means it's time for us to wind down here. Great Debate Studios. Shannon, what a pleasure to have you on the show.
The ultimate pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Legit huge thanks. That was really fun, and we always love having someone come here and wipe the floor with us.
Sharon, people have got to follow you on Twitter, right?
Okay, at Shannon Woodward.
At Shannon Woodward. You've got a big following.
Thanks. It's like Bob Woodward, but but I'm less Republican.
And what's that email address again? Do people can share their election feelings?
It's howIfeel119@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from anyone and everyone who has feelings.
Right on. Well, guys, I had a great time on this episode. Tweet at us, send us some emails, check out our Instagram. We're Great Debate 69 everywhere. Thanks to Shannon Woodward, and we'll see you next week.